This is the Create Your Own Life Show, episode 739, with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
You know, health and illness actually just really boil down to two things, just two. Mm-hmm. Either an excess of something or a deficiency in something. Mm-hmm. You have a deficiency of vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin A, you know, B vitamins. You have a deficiency in nutrition, have a deficiency in exercise, have a deficiency in eat, pray, love, you know, all those good things that you need to take care of your body. You have a deficiency in those things, then you can end up having a dis-ease. If you have an excess of something, like an excess, you're eating crappy food, you have bad emotions, you have all kinds of environmental toxicities in your system, then we have an excess of something that can cause dis-ease too.
This is the Create Your Own Life Show, where we interview people that are world-class performers, from Super Bowl champions to New York Times bestsellers to billionaires. We figure out what makes them tick and unpack it for you to do the same. I'm Jeremy Ryan Slate, and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we help you to create your own life. Hey everyone, Jeremy Slate here, and welcome to episode number 739 of the Create Your Own Life Show. And we have a very interesting episode today. For some of you guys, you may not agree with a lot of what we talk about in this episode, and you may not listen to the show again, and I'm sorry if that's the case, but this is a subject we're going to talk about today that I do feel very strongly about, which I know I don't take a lot of really strong stances on the show, but this is something that is a big deal for me and my family. Also, just a really timely subject as well, as we're going to talk about a lot of what's going on in the world right now. But our guest today is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and she is an osteopathic medical doctor, and she's board certified in three different specialties. She was a full-time emergency medical physician and director of a level 2 trauma center from 1986 to 1998. She's also the founder of Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center in Cleveland, Ohio. She provides a holistic and natural approach to wellness. She attracts patients from all over the country. You know, what we're going to talk about today, she is a very outspoken advocate in the anti-vaccination movement. So we're going to talk about something that for some of you may be brand new, it may be a little shocking, it may be something that you feel strongly in disagreement with me on. So I just want to preface this the same way that I've prefaced some other podcasts that we've done that have been a little bit more, you know, I guess, difficult or harder to swallow. And, you know, there's going to be information here you agree with, there may be information here you don't agree with. And I want to phrase it in such the way that you can learn a lot by, at the same time, taking a look at viewpoints that you don't agree with, because it's also a good idea to take a look at how maybe the other side thinks, or expand your own area of knowledge and influence, because we're not going to talk about a lot of hearsay in this episode. We're going to talk about a lot of hard data. And also in the show notes for this episode, it's going to be a very important show notes page. There's going to be a lot of data linked up in the show notes for this episode. And as I said, it's something that I feel very strongly about, as my wife and I chose not to vaccinate our daughter for a lot of the reasons that we're going to talk about today. So we're definitely going to get into some interesting information on that. And I think, you know, a lot of what we talk about may scare you, may freak you out, or it may justify some decisions you've already made. So I definitely think this is something that needs to be discussed. We're also going to talk about, you know, a vaccination in the COVID-19 world, and also a lot of what's going on around that, masks, social distancing, a lot of other things, as Dr. Tenpenny has also been very outspoken on that as well. So there's a lot of data in this episode, a lot of, I guess, controversial subjects, but my goal in putting this episode together was for us to be able to have, you know, really an informed conversation around this, rather than something just driven by emotion and different things, rather just taking a look at hard numbers and facts. So that's really what I was trying to put together today, and I hope we accomplished that. If you had feedback for me on this episode, it's podcast@jeremyryanslate.com. I am definitely open to your feedback and to open a conversation with you based on that. But before we get into this interview with Dr. Tenpenny, I just really quickly want to spend some time telling you about our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Audible. Audible is offering all Create Your Own Life listeners a free month of Audible and a free audiobook download. Right now, I am reading Behold a Pale Horse, which was recommended to me by good friend Dr. Jason Dean. So if you want to get that book or any other book for free, courtesy of Audible, you can head over to jeremyryanslate.com/book. That is jeremyryanslate.com/book. Also, as you all know, I have a huge purpose to impact a lot of people on this planet. And, you know, you can all help me do that. And it's not a huge ask for you to be able to help me do that. And that's by rating, reviewing, and subscribing to this show. And you can actually do that over an Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever else you listen. And when you leave us a review, I'll actually read that review on the air just to show you how much I appreciate you taking the time to do that, because it actually helps us to reach more people just by you subscribing, rating, and reviewing this show. And this review comes from Jessica Yard, 2015. She says, "This show rocks. Love Jeremy and his constant positive energy. Listen in as he showcases amazing guests sharing their secrets to becoming successful and creating extraordinary lives." Thank you so much, Jessica Yard, 2015. If you want to hear your review read on the air, head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you listen, or the easy way is to go over to ratethispodcast.com/CYOL and leave us a review over there. All right, everyone, without further ado, let's get into this interview with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Welcome to Create Your Own Life Show, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny.
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks so much for having me on.
Dr. Tenpenny, I am just so excited to have you on because, you know, you have done so much for, you know, like our health and our freedom and everything else. And I'm just grateful that you could spend some time with me today.
Absolutely. It's all about getting this message out to letting people know what's going on, what they need to know, what they're being fed that's just propaganda, and how to make better decisions.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to get into quite a bit about, you know, the vaccination world today and vaccine freedom and things like that. And I guess preface this conversation for my audience and just say that my wife and my daughter both are not vaccinated because we thought that was the choice we had to do for us to kind of protect their health and everything like that. And I know for you, a lot of what you've observed and what you've seen as a doctor, Dr. Tenpenny, has really made you passionate about handling this cause. I guess a little bit about your backstory. You know, how did you get into the world of, you know, vaccinations, and how did this, you know, grab your passion and your interests?
It was rather serendipity. It wasn't like I had a vaccine-injured child or a vaccine-injured family member or something like that, that I was some cause to pick up. I mean, my first career, I was board certified in emergency medicine. I was the director of a level 2 trauma center for 12 years. I moved to Cleveland in 1996, and I opened an integrative holistic clinic that I'm always proud to say it's Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center. And I'm always proud to say we've had people from all 50 states and 18 countries come here to get well and get off their pharmaceutical drugs. And so during that time, parents would come in and go, "What do you think about vaccines?" And I'm like, "I really don't have much of an opinion. I grew up in a chiropractic family. I was not vaccinated as a child. I had all the age-appropriate measles, mumps, rubella, chickenpox, pertussis. It never really crossed my radar screen. When I was an ER doc, I used to give away tetanus shots like they were some special kind of candy. But other than that, I really didn't do much with it. I didn't really think about it. Then I got a flyer in the mail to attend the National Vaccine Information Center meeting in Washington, D.C. in September of 2000. And somehow that flyer just never made it to the trash can. Every time I tried to do that, it ended back up on my kitchen counter. And so I felt like there was somebody or some that I was supposed to meet that was important there. So I went to the meeting, and not only was it wasn't somebody, it was something. It was the frontal confrontation about this vaccine issue that I spent 4 days listening to scientists and researchers and parents of vaccine-injured kids and lawyers and doctors talking about these problems associated with vaccines. So when I came home, I thought, how did I miss this? Maybe I ought to look into it a little bit. And I started with the general recommendations of vaccination, the 1998 version of that from the CDC, because I thought, well, they're the experts. They should know something about this. And after I read that paper, I thought, this can't be it. This really can't be. The entire industry is built on this. Maybe I ought to read some more. And reading some more has turned into 20 years and more than 40,000 hours of reading and writing and research and speaking and digging deeper into the rabbit hole more and more over this time. To find out that's why after all these years and all this research, I can stand really firmly on that vaccines are not safe, they don't keep you from getting sick, and they definitely can cause you harm, great harm, including death.
The thing I want to kind of start with here then, because you used a term that's really important to our conversation today, and people may not have heard it before, and that's the idea of being vaccine injured. So Dr. Tenpenny, for those people that may not have encountered that phrase before, what does that mean?
It's pretty simple. It's like saying you had a really severe reaction and a bad side effect after a vaccination. It's just like if you took a shot of penicillin, and you ended up with anaphylactic shock, that would be a penicillin shot reaction. You would end up wearing a medic alert bracelet, and the rest of your life, you would be told to never take penicillin, a penicillin product, or a penicillin related problem, like maybe a cephalosporin, which those two drug families are like cousins. But that's not really the case with vaccines. I mean, when you have a vaccine and you have a serious reaction, like maybe a seizure disorder or an autoimmune condition or anaphylactic shock, or this new condition called SIRVA, which is shoulder injury related to vaccination, or a list of other types of problems that they call them a vaccine injury. Your doctor, first of all, will deny it was the vaccine most of the time. They'll say, no, it had nothing to do with it. You were probably going to have that seizure anyways, like go figure, right? And family history doesn't matter. I mean, you know, it's the only area of medicine that I'm aware of that family history doesn't count. You know, when you go to the doctor and it's a new doctor and you're doing your history and say that you're going, say, for headaches. I mean, they'll say, does your family have a history of headaches? What about migraines? You know, and they don't do that with vaccines. So if a family member has had a severe reaction, it doesn't really matter. You need to get your vaccine anyways. The difference in these vaccine injuries can be delayed before they manifest. And they can last a lifetime. So vaccine injuries are like the package insert side effects. We just call them injuries because they're much more obvious. And in many cases, they last for many, many years.
I guess then taking a look at it, like I was born in 87. So I think I can count on like one hand, you know, the number of vaccinations I probably had to get at that time. So I guess like, you know, looking at it now, it's 2020. Like how many are kids receiving and I guess by what ages?
Well, you were lucky you fell into that window because up through 1985, there were only three vaccines. There was MMR, which is measles, mumps, and rubella. There was DTP, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. And then there was polio, which has three strains of polio virus in them. And that was it through 1985. And not all of them were given. They were still recommended in a three-shot series. The DPT and the polio were a three-shot series. MMR was given all by itself in isolation at 12 months of age. There wasn't a booster. There wasn't a second one. It was just that. And most children during that period of time, like say from, you know, the 70s all the way up through 1991, they all experienced those infections. And I make a really big deal about not calling them a disease. Mm-hmm. A disease is something that comes and stays, like MS or cancer. These are infections. They come and go. They're gone in 10 to 12 days. And in most people, they leave a lifetime of natural immunity.
I know, like for myself, like my neighbors, which I think were like a year or two older than me and younger than me, like we all got chickenpox at the same time. Because it's like, all right, one of you's got it. We might as well all get over it, right?
Yeah, they used to call them chickenpox parties, right?
Yeah, we had one of those.
Everybody get together and have them all at the same time. And they kind of get it all over with, you know? So it was never really that big of a deal for the vast, vast majority of children. And that they ended up with truly a lifetime of natural immunity because they experienced the real infection in the presence of fever. And so you were right. So up through that period of time, and people didn't get all the doses. Well, in 1986, they passed the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, which went into law because the pharmaceutical industry was getting their butts sued all the time from the pertussis vaccine that was causing a lot of brain damage. And we know from the 1960s all the way up through 1985, that 25-year period of time, every year there were multiple studies that were published showing the brain damage and the brain injury that was being caused by the whole cell pertussis vaccine. So they introduced this act. They coerced Reagan into signing it into law in 1986, which gave the pharmaceutical industry complete liability protection for every single vaccine that goes into the pediatric schedule. You cannot sue them. You can't sue the doctor, the nurse, the hospital, the clinic, the manufacturer. You can't sue anybody. They're dirty, filthy product that gets injected into children and adults and causes a problem. They have zero liability.
How does no one see that as a legal problem? Like you create a product that nobody can sue you if it hurts someone. Like, I don't understand that.
Well, I don't understand it either. In fact, I have a really, really good friend who used to be the president and CEO of a Fortune 200 company. He's retired now, but he's way into our sector and knows all of these things. And he's like, well, Sherry, if I could have had all seven divisions of my company to have a complete liability protection for anything that we made in the manufacturing industry, he said, we could have just gone hog wild. We could have made anything. It saved us a ton of money on R&D. It saved us a ton of money on insurance premiums and all that stuff. So the vaccine industry has zero incentive to make any better product because they're not going to get sued. Mm-hmm. So what happened after that law that when the DePlace then, Jeremy, it was like an open door for every vaccine that came to market, they could pile it into the vaccine schedule. So to your original question, you know, up through 1985, there were only three vaccines. Now children get multiple doses of 17 different vaccines with more than 200 different chemicals, up to 12,000 micrograms of aluminum, which all goes into their muscle and gets absorbed into their body and it stays there, over 500 micrograms of mercury, which is a known neurotoxin, chemicals of at least four known carcinogens. They've never been tested for synergistic toxicity. We've got cells from chickens and cow blood and chicken fibroblasts, and there's dog kidney cells and insect eggs, cells from aborted fetal tissue are in several of the vaccines, foreign proteins that are causing all kinds of autoimmune responses. And as soon as that law was passed in 1986, in 1991, just 5 years later, is when the floodgates started. And that's when they introduced the hepatitis B vaccine at birth and the HIB, the Haemophilus influenza B, the HIB vaccine at 2, 4, 6 months and 1 year. And from there, it's just the schedule has just continued to ramp up and ramp up and ramp up.
So I guess, like, is it 17 now, or is that number a lot higher now if we're looking at what kids are getting now?
And they're getting multiple doses of 17. Now, if they only got one dose of each of the vaccines and they were spread way apart, you know, volume of distribution, you know, how much blood and serum and muscles and bones and everything that you have in a human body, that one injection would probably, by volume of distribution, probably just, you know, spread out, and there would probably be very little, if any, side effects. But because children, they get seven vaccines all in the same day at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, and they can get as many as 8 or 9 on their 1 year birthday. And so they get all of this big load of vaccines and all of those metals, all of those foreign proteins, all those chemicals into this little teeny tiny body, not even 1 year of age.
Well, I guess let's talk a little bit about, like, side effects, because you mentioned, you know, mercury being a neurotoxin. You know, there's been a lot of studies on aluminum showing that may cause, like, brain damage and Alzheimer's and things like that. And I guess looking at it, like, one of the big things, and this phrase kind of just bothers me, they're calling it now autism spectrum disorder, because apparently they're somewhere on the spectrum of autism. It's like a really high number now of kids that are autistic. I guess what sort of other, like, issues, and, you know, give us a little idea what the raise in autism looks like now.
Well, back before all of this stuff happened, back in like the 60s and 70s, they estimated that the incidence of autism was about 1 in 10,000 kids. And now there's certain pockets, and New Jersey's one of them, where the incidence rate is like 1 in 45.
That's really high.
There's pockets in Florida that I believe at last count it was like 1 in 34. And there's been estimates that have said that by the year 2030, which is just right around the corner, that it'll be 1 in 2. 50% of all children will be on the autism spectrum. And of that 50%, more than 80% of those will be boys.
Wow.
And what's really interesting about that, and when you talk about autism spectrum, why they call it a spectrum, is because there's varying degrees of injury. The worst case scenario, because autism always comes up as worst case scenario, and you've got these autism deniers out there that all say, you know, they spew the propaganda without looking into the science at all and say vaccines don't cause autism, period, end discussion. That was decided in 1998 with this horrible Dr. Andy Wakefield's paper that we threw underneath the bus, which really wasn't true. And he never claimed it caused autism. All he said was, we need some more research. But even within that cluster of autism, you've got the worst case scenario. I mean, kids that they bang their heads on the wall all day. They never learn to speak. They never are potty trained. They never learn to dress themselves. They'll never function in society. You'll be 15, 20-year-old children still in diapers and banging their heads and maybe have 5 words to communicate. They're functional from the neck down, but basically they have little or no brainstem function, which keeps them eating and breathing. And then there's a whole other long bunch of symptoms in there that some kids may speak, but they have repetitive speech. Some do toe walking, some do hand flapping. Some are just kind of like weird kids, you know, just kind of like strange on the spectrum, and they do little repetitive motions. They still can kind of function in society. And some of the kids on the lower end of that spectrum may look in terms of functionality in society, like maybe a high functioning Downs child would be, that they could get a job and they could, you know, go to school and they can function, but they're not right. Their brain's not right. And why is their brain not right? Because on the package insert in the vaccines, they all talk about these vaccines causing encephalitis, which is inflammation of the brain. And encephalopathy means that something has happened that the brain's not working right. And as long as we talk about encephalitis and encephalopathy, people go, yeah, that can happen with vaccines sometime. But as soon as we translate that into autism, oh, no, that never happens. So it's a language thing. It's not a medical thing. And I think that last count, we have a personal collection of over 160 articles from peer-reviewed mainstream medical journals showing that vaccines are directly associated with autism and autism spectrum. And I know that there's been dozens and dozens of sealed cases inside of the vaccine court that the people have actually been given compensation to take care of their children, their severely mangled children, from these vaccines for the rest of their life.
And I guess just to that point, this number is from 2018, but I got it right off their website. It's been up to $3.9 billion in payouts by, you know, vaccination courts, which kind of blew my mind. That's a lot of money.
Actually, it's more than that.
It's more than that now.
It's like 4.1, almost 4.2 billion. And they estimate that that's less than 10% of people who are actually injured, because most people don't connect the dots between I got a shot and X number of days or weeks or months later, I developed this problem. I developed this health problem. And doctors deny it most of the time. So if you can't go back to your physician, your authority figure, and say, do you think it had anything to do with that vaccine? No, never. It's not that. They were just going to get asthma, allergies, eczema, ADD, ADHD, insulin-dependent diabetes, cancer, autoimmune diseases. Oh, and SIDS. Oh, sorry. We're so sorry. We don't know why it happened. Doesn't matter that your kid got 8 vaccines yesterday. It had nothing to do with the vaccines. They were just going to die anyway.
I guess then looking at it, like as a parent, like, you know, what kind of like ability do we have to do something? Because I know like in New Jersey, we're kind of teetering on this whole like religious exemption. I know we kind of beat it this one time, but now those same exact people are going to reintroduce it again the next session if they can. I know they've been working on it hard. My wife and my daughter were down there in Trenton, I think in like February or something like that, down there protesting.
I was there.
And it's funny because she's our little protester now. So anytime she sees somebody going like this or yelling, she goes, kill the bill. It's very funny. So like what we've been looking at is, you know, we were able to do that under religious exemption, which is slowly running out. But at the same time, like, you know, I pay for public schools, but I may not be able to use them. So we've been looking at, like, I know you were on his show not too long ago. My good friend, Dr. Jason Dean, and I were talking about he homeschools his kids, and we're looking at kind of doing the same thing. So I guess as a parent, like, what do we need to know? And like, what rights and abilities do we have to kind of take control of this situation?
Well, at present time, there are still 46 states, 45 states that have a religious exemption, which, as you know, can be a little hard to get. And you have to use the language to do that varies from state to state. There still are, I believe, 16 states. And I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. So it still is. Ohio is one of the states that still has a philosophical exemption, which means you look at the risk of the infection versus the risk of the vaccine and says, I'm going to vote on the risk of infection because I can get my kid to wash their hands, go to bed on time, take vitamin C, vitamin D, eat organic, you know, get good exercise, eat, pray, love, you know, all those things that my kids can do, right? To keep them, get them healthy.
We've been looking at moving to Pennsylvania because they still have philosophical objection as of right now.
Yeah, they're a little bit more closer to the edge. We ought to come to Ohio. If you're going to move east, come all the way east. Come all the way over here. Ohio's a great state. But the thing is that, you know, those exemptions only apply from K through 12. They don't apply to college, and they don't apply to a medical school or professional school, and they don't apply to your job, because those are all fall into the policy thing. So here's what I think that parents should be thinking outside the box, and not like confronting the beast directly, like, how do I stay away from you? But like, the only thing that politicians care about, Jeremy, you know, the only thing they care about is money and votes.
Yep,
money and votes. So what if a bunch of parents, all the parents that have chosen to homeschool, what if they get together and they sue their county for a refund on their taxes that goes to be going to fund a public education? It's funding a service that they don't use. You know, I don't think anything like that has been tried before, because it has to be done locally. So it would be in your school district. And what if you got a bunch of parents who are homeschooling and went to that school district? And I don't know if it would be against the school district, against the county. I don't know. And I imagine that it would probably vary from county to county what the rules are. Sure. But say, hey, I'm paying taxes on a service that I'm not using or that I'm not allowed to use unless it's we play by your rules. And so therefore, I'm taking my money back off the table. I'm thinking that we need to start thinking creatively at different types of things like that, that fall into the legal arena, that fall into the money arena, then go to your local politicians. And if they say, oh, no, you can't do that, then vote them out. Isn't there something about taxation without representation, you know, that we started this whole country on to begin with? And maybe those are some of those principles that we need to start reactivating and starting going after and start looking. Because when they say, well, it's policy, well, I don't have to abide by your policy. And they'll say, well, you don't have to do what I say either. But yes, I do, because if I don't go to school or I don't homeschool, then I get charged with truancy. Mm-hmm. So the policy is impacting on my ability to function. So thinking about those things, and I'm sure in your community, there's probably some really smart people. There's probably some people that have run for public office before. Is there some lawyers and maybe some CPAs in there, some CPAs that could crunch some numbers and say, mm-hmm. okay, if there's, you know, in our school district, if there's 100 families and they all pay taxes and suddenly that money comes out, what does that mean detrimentally to the school system? And this is just one that kind of off the top of my head. But I think that these are the types of think tanks that we need to be working at, not how that we can write a fancier exemption and how do we get around this, but how do we attack the beast from money and politics?
And as well, like, and I don't think a lot of people think of this, like under campaign finance reform, a lot of these people have to disclose who their funders are. And I think Open Secrets is like one of the sites, and there's a couple different sites that you can look at, like, where is their money coming from? And if you look at, you know, in New Jersey, the Democrats that were pushing the bill, their 70% of their funding all comes from, you know, the companies producing these vaccines. So it's a problem when, you know, the money funds the policy, which then, you know, there is no liability on the policy once it's passed. That's a real problem.
It's a very big problem. And that needs to get exposed over and over and over again, because it's not something that people commonly know. I mean, unless you're operating in this sector and having these conversations mm-hmm. about injury compensation programs, about a liability, about exemptions, about follow the money, unless you happen to be in this little sector, you just follow the authority figure, your doctor, making the assumption that your doctor knows all about it and your doctor would never do anything to harm you. Well, I don't think that doctors would overtly do anything to harm you, but they would. There's errors of omission. Mm-hmm. I intentionally harmed you, or commission that I intentionally harmed you. And there's errors of omission, meaning that I didn't know that I was harming you mm-hmm. by injecting you with all of these things. And I think that most physicians have errors of omission, that they don't even bother to read a package insert. And part of it is because they get compensated for fully vaccinated kids in their practice. I mean, we know that from Blue Cross Blue Shield, that if they have, let's say there's 1,000 kids in their practice and 63% of those kids are fully vaccinated by 2 years of age, Blue Cross Blue Shield, an award program that I'm sure there's backdoor money coming in there from the drug companies, that they get paid $400 per child. But we understand it for the one full 1,000, not just the 63% that are in compliance. So there's a lot of money involved with that, a lot of money.
So it really comes down to like grassroots accountability, like holding our medical system, our schools, our doctors, and everybody else accountable to what's going on here. I know in New Jersey, my wife and also our good friend Jen have been very involved with Conscious Coalition, which is doing a lot for that here in New Jersey. So we really need to find out who our grassroots are in a local community and get involved, right?
Absolutely. And we need every warm body. We need to try every idea mm-hmm. because we need to throw every piece of spaghetti against the wall right now, because we don't know in which school district and what politician or whatever is moving, because the train for this COVID-19 vaccine has left the station and it is roaring down the track.
So I want to quickly tell you about today's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Gusto, and this is actually the payroll management system that we use at my company, Command Your Brand. We've used them for years, absolutely love them, and they offer modern, easy payroll, benefits, and HR service to small business across the country. They were even named Best Online Payroll by PC Mag, and as a listener, you'll actually get $100 free just for trying the service via an Amazon gift card if you just head over to jeremyryanslate.com/gusto and get your free trial. As I said, we have used Gusto at Command Your Brand to run all of our payroll, handle all of our taxes, all of that filing, and it makes it just a snap. We absolutely love them. So if you want to get started with Gusto and get a $100 Amazon gift card just for getting started, head over to jeremyryanslate.com/gusto and get started with Gusto today. We'll get to that in just a second, but I want to kind of bring in another thing that we had from a listener, and he's actually up in Buffalo, and he said that, you know, one of the issues they're seeing is their school is trying to mandate that his daughter get the HPV vaccine, which they're now mandating for one of my friends out in Long Island. They're trying to mandate it for her sons, you know, for boys. For boys and girls. So I guess, like, why are they trying to do this? And as a parent, like, what can we do about it? And what things do we have to worry about?
Well, what you have to worry about is it's one of the most neurotoxic vaccines they've ever developed. I think there's over 500 documented deaths in the U.S. alone from the Gardasil vaccine. And you can find that information on the SaneVax site, S-A-N-E-V-A-X, SaneVax.org. They log all of that and they scrape the VAERS database, the injury database, and they keep track of it. The last time I looked was a while ago, and I think that number of teenage deaths was approaching 500. So, and the number of girls and boys around the world who are severely injured, there's like 7 countries who are considering banning that vaccine from their schedule because of the serious side effects from it. And I think that we really need to blow back really hard. Parents need to like join arms and really blow back against, for sure, against all the vaccines that are really not communicable diseases. Gardasil has never been tested with an adequate endpoint that shows that it does prevent cancer. They don't know. They don't have any idea. They use something called a surrogate endpoint, and they only followed it for 4 years. They know that girls don't get cervical cancer until they're in their 30s and 40 years of age, but they're given that vaccine to 9 to 12-year-old kids. They don't have any idea how long the antibodies will last. They're not even creating an antibody against the real virus. They're creating it against a virus particle. So there's all kinds of reasons why this vaccine is not good, should not be given to anyone ever. And it's not communicable. I mean, let's put on the opposition hat for a second and say, I'm going to be like the pro-vaccine person. And I am a big representative of public health. What should I be most concerned about? I should be concerned about infections that cause serious complications and possibly even death and are easily spread. So which one would that be? Well, from their perspective, I guess you could say the flu, because it spreads pretty readily and some people can die from the flu. Measles, because measles spreads really readily, even though it's not deadly. I mean, they've made it out to be deadly. The death rate from measles in 1962, before the measles vaccine even came out, was 2 per million. Two per million before we even had a vaccine. And the vaccine came out in 1963. It's not any worse now.
So they came out with a vaccine for something that was 2 per million.
In terms of death. Now, the incidence rate was really high. They call it the burden of illness. There was a lot of kids that got measles.
Right.
But not very many died from it. And even less die from it now because the incidence is really low. But if I was a public health person, I'd be concerned about measles, because if there's an outbreak of measles, it spreads really fast. Not that it's deadly. But there's nothing else. Like, why do we give kids 5 tetanus shots? It's not a communicable disease. Why do we give kids hepatitis A, which was developed specific for a specific population of migrant workers? Why do we give kids Gardasil that's never been proven to prevent cervical cancer? And it's not communicable. I mean, I can't sit next to a little boy and give it to him. And the little boy can't sit next to the little girl and give it to her. It's not communicable in a classroom. Should not be given at all.
Wow. It's interesting to me, Dr. Tenpenny, it's just like that 2 in a million number, like, really hits me, because statistics can be used in such a way that they make things, you know, like, incorrect. Like, the thing that came to my mind, first of all, is, so my daughter was born in 2018 and we did a home birth. And, you know, one of the things we had to do as part of the process is you still have to meet with an OBGYN, like, just in case, you know, anything happens or whatever. And he looks us straight in the face with his scare tactic and says, well, do you know that your risk of dying in a home birth is twice as much as a hospital birth? I'm like, cool, what are the numbers? He's like, 1 in 1,000 versus 2 in 1,000. Whoa, that is a huge difference, man. But like, really, they can use a lot of these numbers to skew things. And it's crazy to me.
Well, that's the entire process that they've done with this COVID testing. The numbers are irrelevant. nobody really knows what it means to you test positive. Does that mean that you're sick? No, if I don't have a fever, I'm not sick. If I'm test positive, if I'm not symptomatic, then does that mean I can spread the virus? Am I this new label of an asymptomatic carrier, which is just nonsense? Because unless you're sick, you're not sneezing, you're not coughing, you're not spreading anything. If it's positive, does that mean we've tested a tiny little bit of genetic material in your blood, but you have to have the whole virus in order for you to be able to spread it? And they don't even just measure the virus. What they actually do is they use a type of testing called PCR testing, which is polymerase chain reaction. And they had to come up with a whole new type of PCR testing because the original PCR testing was developed only for DNA viruses. The guy who developed it in 1963, I got a Nobel Prize on it, and it was only ever intended to be used in a laboratory to see whether or not the virus was present in a laboratory setting. It was never, ever intended to be used to diagnose infection or disease. Wow. And so what they have to do is they have to take that little bit of snip, and how it was intended to be used in the lab is that they replicate it enough times so that they get a big enough quantity of that little snip of genetic material. So then they can study it and they can start to match it up. But you have to like do this thing called amplification, which is just fabricating the number of pieces of virus. So let me use HIV as an example, because they use PCR for HIV. And if you get tested, the amplification process, the number has to be like 37 of those little snips in order for you to be tested positive for HIV. If it's 35, it's kind of equivocal. So if you got 37, it's positive and you get a notification you're positive for HIV. But if you're in South Africa, that number is like 40. And if you're in Australia, it's like 42. So you can just lose your diagnosis of HIV by going on an airplane and going to another country and get tested.
Wow.
It's the same as happening with this coronavirus stuff. The CDC, the FDA, the NIH, Gavi, the World Health Organization has not given a definition to what it means to be positive. But we are making public policy. We're changing all kinds of requirements. We're shutting down businesses. We're not allowing people to travel over a positive diagnosis. And what does it mean if you're positive? Does it maybe mean you were exposed before and now you're immune? Because now I'm positive, now I've got an immune response. Is that what that means? So maybe I should be out running around because I'm healthy. What does it mean if I'm negative? Does it mean I've never been exposed to the virus? If it's negative, am I susceptible that I might get sick? Maybe I better put on a mask and gloves and stay home. Nobody is defining these except they are causing mass hysteria over something that means nothing.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that, because that was actually one of our listener questions. And it wasn't an exact question. It's a little more loaded, Marco, but he wants to know, what are your thoughts on the COVID-19 vaccination? And one of the things you had mentioned to me when we were starting here is, you know, one of the things we have to look at is the PrEP Act that was passed in 2005. And so I guess let's take a look at that. Like, what are your thoughts on that and all this, like, you know, tracing and stuff like that we're doing? Because it's honestly pretty crazy. Like, I was in, you know, you mentioned businesses not being open. Like, the only place I can really go right now is Walmart, which is ridiculous. But I was in the other day, and there was a guy literally yelling at the woman behind him in line because she wasn't wearing a mask. "You're killing my whole family." Screaming, "You're killing my whole family." Like, we're in a very weird situation right now. And like, you know, what are your thoughts on, like, you know, the whole social distancing and the vaccination and whatnot?
Well, the whole thing about the mask, I mean, if I would have been that woman, I would have looked at him and said, "But excuse me, sir, you're wearing a mask. Don't you think your mask protects you?"
Right. You should be fine.
You should be fine. I'm sorry that you've been misled to think that apparently you don't think your mask protects you, because you wouldn't be behaving in this manner. But if you think it keeps you safe, I don't understand why it makes a difference whether I'm wearing a mask or not. It's the same argument about vaccinated versus unvaccinated, right? Mm-hmm. If your kids are vaccinated and you feel like that was the thing you needed to do to protect them, why are you concerned about being around an unvaccinated kid? If you think vaccines protect, then the unvaccinated kid is at risk. Thank you for being concerned, but I'm not concerned. And so, you know, go about your business, right?
Right.
So this whole thing with the mask is couples in with the concept of social distancing, which is just a way to destroy humanness. Mm-hmm. Because humans are pack animals. They like to hug and kiss and shake hands and high five and, you know, jump up and down and, you know, pat each other in the back. They like to sit next to each other.
That's literally what you and I were talking about right before we recorded here. Is we were up in New York State. My daughter's, you know, she's almost two. She loves people. She's the friendliest little creature you've ever met. And she tried to hug this kid, and they're on top of the playground. The kid took her and pushed her off, and she fell about 3 feet onto her neck. I was concerned my kid was going to break her neck because the kid goes, no, you can't hug me. We're messing up our kids right now.
We're messing up our whole society, Jeremy. You know, look at how many people, how quickly people rolled over on this mask issue and how on the 6 feet, the social distancing, the little yellow footprints that they put everywhere where people are supposed to stand, you know, the contact tracing, which is legalized spying. And, you know, when this first started, so like the first part of March, when I very first heard social distancing, I was standing in the kitchen at my office and I went, social distancing. Well, they can't just say we need to like spread apart a little bit here. Now we've got this new phrase that's going to be in our language lexicon forever, social mm-hmm. distancing. And we're all going to start wearing masks, which what are we hiding behind? And we know that upwards to 70% of communication between humans is nonverbal. It's facial expression. It's, you know, what you do with your mouth and, you know, what you do with your eyes. But if you're only seeing your eyes and you're breathing, your oxygen level is lowering and your CO2 level is going up and your eyes are getting glazed over and you look sleepy. And the virus that you're spreading is collecting on the outside of this mask. And we know that people are now touching the mask and everything 2 to 3 times more than you would normally touch your face because you're always adjusting it. And if you got on glasses, it's steaming up your glasses and all of
these. Oh, man, I wear glasses. It's super annoying.
It really is. I wear glasses, too. And so all of this stuff that we're doing is the deconstruction of the human race to more introduce artificial intelligence. It's a promotion of the transhumanism movement. Mm-hmm. is what this is. And I want to read you something because I'm in a really pretty big project right now, putting together some big, usable, printable documentation on the stuff with this mask, about mm-hmm. this mask. And this article came out June 11th. So it's relatively new. And it was published from, it's called rcreader.com.
And we'll make sure we link that up in the show notes as well. Because I know you've given a lot of resources today. So we want to make sure definitely everybody can get those.
And the name of the article is Masks Don't Work, A Review of Science Relative to COVID-19 Social Policy. And it's a really, really long article loaded with all kinds of references and links to peer-reviewed journals from PubMed, not from conspiratology.com, not from like, you know, bloggy places, but from real places that, you know, like the Wiley Library and all that stuff. And I want to read the conclusion. It's just a couple sentences.
Sure.
But I think it's really important. That the conclusion of is, this is only about halfway through the article, and then it goes down into other things. It says, there is no RCT, which is real-time testing, study with verified outcomes that shows a benefit to healthcare workers or community members in households to wearing a mask or an N95 respirator. There is no such study. There are no exceptions. Likewise, no study exists that shows a benefit from a broad policy to wear masks in public. Furthermore, if there were any benefit to wearing a mask because of the blocking power against droplets and aerosol particles, then there should be more benefit of wearing a respirator N95 compared to surgical masks. And yet several very large meta-analysis and all testing prove that there's no such relative benefit. Masks and respirators do not work.
Wow.
It doesn't get any more clear than that. And then there's all kinds of tables and graphs and references, the R-naught number and what that really means. And what they say clearly further down in the article, it says, to put it simply, the second wave of a pandemic is not a consequence of human sin regarding mask wearing and handshaking. Rather, the second wave is an inescapable consequence of air dryness driven manyfold that increases the disease contagiousness in a population that has not yet attained herd immunity. It has to do with humidity. And when you're continually wearing a mask, you've got all this humidity because when you exhale, you have humidity in your breath and in your nose. Your mask gets damp. You collect bacteria from your nose, from your mouth that you're breathing, from your skin, from your hands that you collect in your mask. So you have a higher likelihood of spreading that to other people or inhaling it and making yourself sicker than you would have ever if your body was just acting normally. And when you see people out running around with masks on, I mean, there've already been reported cases of children having cardiac arrests from wearing a mask and exercising. They've shown people that can't exercise and wear a mask. And the reason for that is when you're exercising, Your body is creating lactic acid in its muscles. And the lactic acid is going into the lungs and being converted into carbon dioxide that you're supposed to be expelling. Well, if you're inhaling it back in with a mask while you're exercising, you're getting more and more and more acidic, more lactic acid, more carbon dioxide, more lactic acid, more carbon dioxide. So you get to the place where you're acidic enough that you can cause a fibrillation and have a cardiac arrest.
Wow. You know, it's really interesting. I read an article, a study back in, I think this is in May or something. Yeah, it was May 26th. I read this by Maurice de Hund, who is a Dutch data scientist. And he was saying the same thing that you're saying, like a lot of this transmission is based off of humidity and stuff like that. And that's why we're seeing, you know, certain places with the transmission. It doesn't really have anything to do with the masks, like you're saying.
No. And the thing is that I read somewhere, this is quite a while ago now, that they were using the analogy of saying that because of the size of the pores in the cloth masks, in the cotton masks, you know, when you wrap a cloth around your face, even when you use the N95 respirator that isn't tightly fit to your face, and none of them are. If there's any gap that around there, you're not accomplishing what the N95 is supposed to do. And that the size of the virus, particularly compared to the size of the holes in the mask, it's like putting up a chain link fence around your garden and to try to keep out the mosquitoes.
Mm.
So the holes in the mask are not doing anything to keep me, if I'm infected, which I'm not, if I'm healthy, you know, I heard a bunch of doctors that were talking about this over, across the internet recently. They said an asymptomatic carrier is a healthy person. We carry around trillions of bacteria and viruses every single day in our normal microbiomes of what lives on our skin and in our mouth and in our gut and in our brain. You know, there's trillions of microbes. And so we are already always an asymptomatic carrier of viruses and bacteria. What makes this virus so special that it's the only one that can hop off of our body and go somewhere and make somebody sick unless we have on a mask? I mean, these viruses are really smart. They're really smart. You can't go to church and hang out with 10 people there, but you can go in a protest, in a Black Lives Matter protest with tens of thousands of people walking down the street. You can go to the park and go to the beach and hang out with a bunch of people. That's okay. But God forbid you go to a restaurant where there might be four people sitting in there. The virus is really smart, though. It knows the difference between a party and a church pew. It really knows the difference.
Don't even get me started on that one. I know we're recording this, and it's the 30th of June as we're recording this here in Jersey on the 2nd, which is Thursday coming up. A lot of our restaurants are supposed to open for indoor dining. Well, our lovely governor, Phil Murphy, was caught on camera. I have the photos. Dining inside at a restaurant with all his friends and family as he just announced yesterday that we cannot for a longer period of time. He's now holding it up. So it's
how is it, Jeremy,
hypocrisy is beyond
me. People get away with this.
Yeah.
I mean, why? I don't know. I mean, we get the government we deserve, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess let's bring it back around, you know, to the health standpoint of things here, Dr. Tenpenny. I guess like looking at like being in somewhat in control of the situation and like, how do we handle that health? I know like some of it is like detoxification. Some of it is like, you know, what's in our body system. So like, I guess, how do we at least detoxify what's there? So we're making ourselves, you know, healthier and less susceptible to this stuff.
You know, health and illness actually just really boil down to two things, just two, either an excess of something or a deficiency in something. Mm-hmm. You have a deficiency of vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin A, you know, B vitamins. You have a deficiency in nutrition, have a deficiency in exercise, have a deficiency in eat, pray, love, you know, all those good things that you need to take care of your body. If you have a deficiency in those things, then you can end up having a dis-ease. If you have an excess of something, like you're eating crappy food, you have bad emotions, you have all kinds of environmental toxicities in your system, then we have an excess of something that can cause dis-ease too. So one of the things that we've been recommending is a product that we sell through our website. It's a Chrysolite Zeolite, which is a specific type of zeolite product. It comes as a spray. You can use it as at any age group, including newborns. In any age group, it's anywhere from 2 to 4 sprays, 2 to 3 times a day. And what it does is it grabs hold of heavy metals. It grabs hold of POPs, which are persistent organic pollutants, and drags them out of the system. All the junk food that you've been eating because you can't go to a nice restaurant and eat good stuff, it drags out all of that stuff. It takes out some of the vaccine toxicities, some of the aluminum, a bit of the mercury. And it's a spray, so you can give it to kids. And we've started promoting this because I started using it myself personally. And just to tell you a little bit about how, you know, somebody sent it to me and they said, here, try this. Well, it just so happens that I had had a headache for a couple of weeks. And it was like, like on a scale of 0 to 10, like a 1, 1.5, just one of those low level naggy kinds of headaches. And nothing I did made it better. I went to my chiropractor, you know, I took vitamins, I tried to get more sleep, more hydration, blah, blah, blah. Nothing made it go away. So I get this detox spray, this Pure Body detox spray. I took 4 sprays and within 10 minutes, the headache was gone and it's never come back.
Wow.
And so somewhere along the line, I had obviously run into something that was, you know, toxic and causing a little disruption. And that one dose, it just went away. So now I use it about 3 to 4 times a day. I keep it sitting by my computer. We've started promoting it last month. And already people are just sending back the most amazing testimonials about their kids that had constipation or that they couldn't talk. There was one little boy that could talk but couldn't sing, and now he's humming. I mean, there's just like amazing things that once you start to detox the body, oh, it gets a whole lot better.
And where can we find that if we're hearing this and I'm interested in getting it? Because I know like my wife and I are definitely going to pick some up. So where can we find out about this?
I have lots of websites, but the primary website that we have is called Vaxxter.com, V as in Victor. AXXTER, Vaxxter.com. And you can go there in the upper corner. It says Detox Your Body. And if you click on that, you can read more about the product. And if you sign up for the auto ship, you get a 20% discount and free shipping in the US and the UK for month after month after month. You always get that 20% discount and free shipping in the US and in the UK. So you can find it at Vaxxter.com on that link. And I just think that, you know, people say, well, do I just take one bottle and I'm done? And I said, well, did you stop being in a toxic world? If you do, I want to go and live in that bubble with you, wherever that happens to be. You know, is it one and done? You know, am I over? Everything's okay now? So
very cool. Dr. Tenpenny, just as we're wrapping up here, like, you know, one of my favorite things to ask all of my guests, because, you know, I deal with so many world-class individuals like yourself on the show. And like, if you could be far in the future and, you know, like be the one to write what your legacy looks like, tell us what that legacy that you leave behind looks like.
The vaccine industry has imploded and completely gone away. It's a 200-year multi-generational indoctrination based on lies and myths from the very beginning, wrapped up in a belief system. And the belief system is then coded with money. And it's all about the money, the belief system, and a lie. And we're crushing the immune system of children for commerce. And if we could kill that industry and make it go away, make the vaccine industry implode and go away once and for all, the world would be a much, much healthier, happier place.
Well, Dr. Tenpenny, I have so enjoyed chatting with you today. And I know I've learned a ton. For all the people listening, if they want to check out more about what you're doing and follow you, where's going to be the best place for them to go?
Well, Vaxxter, like we already said, we'd really appreciate if you would join up for our email list, because we're trying to grow our list right now. And you could do that right on the form of V-A-X-X-T-E-R, V as in Victor, Vaxxter.com. You can actually text MVI, which is Mastering Vaccine Info. You can text it right from your phone if you're listening to this on your phone. You can text it to 555-888. So you can text M like VI, like Mary Victor Iris, to 555-888. Then if you want to see all the long list of things that we do, our boot camp, our individual courses, our library, you know, our social media platforms, you know, learn more about me, you know, who I really am, you can find all of that housed at coursesformastery.com. Courses, the number 4mastery.com. And you'll even see Vaxxter's link in there. So that's kind of a landing page where we can kind of consolidate all of our programs. And so that's where you can find out all about what we do. And we offer a lot. We're busy. We're very busy.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, thank you so much for joining me today on the Create Your Own Life show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeremy. It's been a real pleasure.
Hey everyone, thanks for hanging out with me and Dr. Tenpenny today. I know we did really cover some heavy, heavy subjects here. And as I said, it was a little bit controversial, but it's something I do think very strongly about, and I wanted to really share that with you. There was something that Dr. Tenpenny and I didn't get to in this interview, but it's also very, very important. So there's an article on her site, which is Vaxxter.com. If you go to the blog tab, there's an article called Coronavirus Part 3 Testing. What are we doing? What does it mean? Definitely want to check that one out, because she pointed out to me, and I did mention it in this episode, but we kind of got sidetracked a little bit. And I'm just going to read a quote here from this article, but I do recommend you check out the whole thing about the PrEP Act. She says, on February 4th, Alex Azar, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, HHS, issued a declaration of public human emergency and activated the Public Readiness Emergency Preparedness Act, otherwise known as the PrEP Act. She says, this nefarious legislation provides a complete protection of manufacturers from liability from all products, technologies, biologics, and any vaccine developed as a medical countermeasures against COVID-19 for those nervously waiting for a vaccine to become available. She says, be sure to understand the PrEP Act before rushing to get in line. So if you want to check out this article, I do think it's important to understand some of that legislation as we are kind of, I guess, you know, as a country rushing into a lot of stuff. So it's good to just be informed. So check that out. Once again, the title of the article is Coronavirus Part 3, Testing. What are we doing? What does it mean? So you're going to want to check that out about the PrEP Act. So if you want to find out more about Dr. Tenpenny, really the best place to go in her hub is the Vaxxter.com site. And that's Vaxxter.com. A lot of really great articles on there, whether they're about, you know, the current health crisis we're going through or about a lot of the things with vaccination we talked about today. But we did cover a lot of primary sources, so a lot of these are going to be linked up on the show notes for this episode. So it's going to be important you check out that show notes page if you have questions, if you want more information, if you want to learn about some things. There's some really good primary sources over there, which as a historian, primary sources are very important to me. So you're going to want to check those out over at the show notes page, which is at jeremyryanslate.com/739. Also, as you know, I want to help a lot of people, and you guys can help me do that by heading over to Apple Podcasts, rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the show. And if you leave me a review and you're nice enough to do that, I will read that review on the air because it really does help us to reach more people. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. We have a really awesome episode coming out on Wednesday with Dr. David Perlmutter, whose book, Grain Brain, I was introduced to a bunch of years ago. And in this episode, we're actually going to talk about his new book, Brainwashed. And we're going to take a look at how our diet and also the information that we're consuming is really affecting a lot of neurodegenerative diseases. So that's definitely going to be something you want to check out. As we're on a little bit of a health kick this week. I know it's not typical for us, but it is also very intriguing and interesting to know. So that's going to be on Wednesday. Episode number 740 with Dr. David Perlmutter about his books Grain Brain and Brainwash. So thank you so much for hanging out with me today, everybody. Have an amazing day, and get out there and go create your own life.